Hi everyone, welcome to the podcast edition of the Poetry Vlog. This is Kristen from the Poetry Vlog student team. Today's episode is with guest Somaya Daoud on Marvel Cinematic Universe, the comic Monstrous, and representation in comics. This podcast episode is the audio from our YouTube channel, so for the full experience, click the link in the caption to watch the video. As you know, the Poetry Vlog is also supported by a team of students, so to give us some feedback and let us know how we're doing, for the podcast edition, leaving us a review on iTunes goes a long way. We'd really appreciate it. You can also reach out to us on Twitter and on Instagram at the Poetry Vlog for both of those. Also, if you're interested in supporting the Poetry Vlog as an educational project, head on over to anchor.fm/support/thepoetryvlog to donate a little as a dollar a month. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Poetry Vlog. Today we have
Somaya Daoud.
What did we talk about?
Today we talked about comics, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, non-closures, and possible futures.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff about racism as well, because
yes.
Why not?
Yes.
Remember that you can find you where?
Find me on Twitter as Somaya Daoud, on the website as somayabooks.com, Facebook as Somaya Daoud, and Instagram as Somaya with three I's.
Perfect. And if you're listening to the podcast version, all of that was shown visually on the YouTube channel and is linked in both descriptions for podcast and YouTube.
Yes.
And remember, you can always find all of the Poetry Vlog comment at thepoetryvlog.com, and all of the links to social are there as well. And I want to give a special plug for the newsletter. It's sent out once
great.
A month.
Which is great.
Thank you. I've gotten to have a lot of fun with that, actually. But it's actually quite popular. There's quite a few people signed up. So sign up for the newsletter. You might get a special snail mail surprise, actually, of like stickers and magnets, if I still have some left at that point. Remember to subscribe and like, because the Poetry Vlog is only as big as you make it. LOL. Students, you can laugh at me at this point. And then by the end of this episode, you'll get to have an insight on our opinion on Endgame.
Yes.
Which is from the Marvel Universe. You probably all know that I didn't sidecar. And much, much more. But that's the main takeaway you'll get at the end. All right, enjoy.
Washington and the author of Mirage and its upcoming sequel, Court of Lions, which follows up with Imani and the gang and what they're doing now that, I think, spoilers?
Yeah, do it.
Now that she's been discovered to be a rebel by the princess mom.
Perfect, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
And you all recognize her because she did an episode last year,
yes.
back when Mirage first came out,
yes.
for which I got to get a copy at the
yeah.
beginning, and then I was officially like, oh my god, now I've been
yeah.
like pestering her about the sequel. So I'm really excited that you were willing to come back on.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And what did you want to talk about today?
So this summer I have been obsessed with this graphic novel series called Monstrous by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda. So Marjorie Liu did a bunch of Marvel comics. So she did X-23 and my favorite Black Widow comic, which is The Name of the
okay.
Rose. And then Sana Takeda is an artist who had done some Marvel work, and now her art style is very manga.
Yeah.
And so it's beautiful and like ornate and really
yeah.
elaborate. And I don't really feel like a lot of artists have really distinct styles, but I don't think that there are many artists that do art like Sana Takeda's.
Okay, how so why? Like what's
just sort
it?
Of like because I mean I come off of reading I read a lot of Marvel comics, and so like
yeah.
they're produced so quickly, I think. And so there's a lot
yeah.
of like
just the Endgame.
Yeah. Sorry. I saw it twice. I loved it. I know a lot
yeah.
of people have problems with it, but like that ending, it made me cry. Like
Tim cried as well.
Oh.
You and Tim should talk.
Yeah.
He's like a major Marvel fan.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh
yeah,
man,
yeah, yeah.
I. This
okay,
is a,
let me sidebar
yeah,
to end.
Yeah.
Like, let's just hear your take on Endgame.
So two things. So first, when the San Diego Comic-Con like Marvel slate was announced, there's like it was so big. I was like, oh wow, I think I'm gonna have to opt out of Phase 4. And then like with every new announcement, I was like, oh my god, this is 10 things. 10
yeah.
things I'm gonna pay money for. Like I got to the end and they were like, Mahershala Ali is Blade. And I was like, oh my god, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah.
No, but Endgame was like, I think I really liked it because it did the things that comics do best, which is it was wacky. And that's like, like I have a lot of complaints about the Russos, but I do think that they like
what?
The Russo brothers, who are the brothers that did.
I'm gonna ask you to explain a lot of proper nouns as we go.
Okay. So the Russos are, they did the Winter Soldier, which is like my favorite Marvel movie. And then
that
one's
about who?
That one's about Captain America and Bucky. So they did that.
That's your favorite?
That's my favorite. Because it's written like a spy thriller. And that's my jam, right? So I love that movie. And then they took control of phase three. Okay. And so they did Infinity War and Endgame and like did the creative direction for all of the other movies that were in that slot. And so they're bad at women.
It's an understatement.
Yeah, that's a real understatement.
I'm not a Marvel girl. So I've seen bits and pieces here and there. And then during Endgame, I was just like,
Oh yeah. I lucked out with Endgame because all of the characters that I love, which are mostly men because they're the ones that get done the best, I was like, it got everything that I wanted. And then there were a lot of female characters where I was like,
bummer.
If I was a fan, I would be really upset. And then they had that whole thing where they were like, the first LGBT character is gonna arrive in Endgame, and it was like one of the Russo brothers playing the gay dude in the Greek castle session, that was like their representation, like introduction into the MCU, right? And it got like a lot of press.
I heard that Tessa Thompson's character is gonna get her own storyline.
Yeah, she had
and
one.
Captain Marvel's like obviously gay, right?
They're not gonna go there. They're absolutely not, because she's straight in the comics, and she fits into a lot of like the straight macho sort of stuff that they really like, so they're not gonna queer her up, even though she's so obviously like a butch lesbian.
Yeah.
So like the scene where she's at the funeral.
I saw like the one where like her actual movie where you meet her friend. I was
holy
like,
her what?
Yeah, I was so confused. I was like, her friend?
Like her friend who what? Like she like platonically lives with and like platonically raised her daughter.
And then when she showed up in Endgame with her cut-off hair, well, I don't say that cut-off hair means you're gay.
Right.
By any stretch of the imagination, but this is like a top-billing film, so I expect them to do some clicheing.
Right.
I was like, oh, and maybe this is why she doesn't get her due. Maybe they still give, like, the gay woman her due. Sorry.
The whole thing. But so in Ragnarok, Tessa Thompson did have a scene where she had a girlfriend and they cut her out. They cut the scene out. Right, so like Valkyrie is in canon, in comic canon, she is bisexual.
Okay.
And so that was represented in Ragnarok, and then they cut the scene.
Quick plug, I identify bisexuality as non-binary sexuality. Plug for my own video.
Okay. All right, keep going. Yeah, so Endgame was like super wacky, there were lots of hijinks, and then like the character, because I'm such a Marvel cliche, my favorite character is Steve Rogers. And so. He's Captain America.
Oh,
right.
So no.
No.
He makes me want to die.
Okay. Because
why? All right. Give
us a view. Because I think that here's the thing is I think that he's really easy to like, and in the comics he is really jingoistic, and I feel Oh my god.
Jingoistic means what?
Very easy to parrot patriotism and nationalism he's the poster boy for join the military. But I think that, in the movies, he's so earnest, and Chris Evans sees him as really earnest, and really, on some horrible level, I'm really basic. And Chris is Steve is just really, I feel like, when he's written best in the MCU, which does not include the first Avengers movie, or the second Avengers movie, he really pushes against, or the character tries to push against the jingoism, and it's really hard to write him out of that because it is
Literally
the MCU is repping how great the military industrial complex is.
Yeah.
Right?
And not subtly at all.
Not subtly at all.
Here's why we need it.
Here's why we need the government and why we need surveillance.
And why we need a large military base built of super post-human wages.
And this is my problem with the Civil War movie is that it presented this problem that you can't present in superhero comics, which is how do you regulate superheroes? And it's superheroes have to exist outside the system, otherwise they're just police.
Yeah.
So you can't ask that question of a superhero comic.
I agree with you. Explain that to the people watching, because they might be I'm sorry, what?
Okay, so in Civil War, the concept is that they have to come under government control, which means that the governments or a collection of governments chooses what like disasters or issues they address, when they're deployed, how they use force, like what sort of force it is, especially because you have like a diverse array of powers or whatever. So like what sort of legislated force is applicable to whatever situation, and like that's just cops. It's just cops.
I mean, it is like, and so in like high theory world, it's like literally the state of exception requires and like militarized force that exists as the constant exception to like otherwise regulated living in order to continue the regulation of living.
And it's like, you know, like it's not like I'm saying that Steve Rogers should be able to decide, you know, what is the situation that he needs to intervene in. But in the world of superhero comics, that's a better, that like that's a better way to address the problem than to have it legislated by the government, right? Like that's the reason superhero comics exist, to like be able to present to you a force that exists outside of the system that in a lot of ways is framed as being held responsible by the people, right? Like Steve Rogers answers to the public, not the United States government, right? So in some ways Steve never really gets to escape that, but then also Civil War is about how he's like, F the government, like I'm absolutely not going, I'm not going to be legislated, this body doesn't belong to you. Know, and he does it so earnestly, and Chris Evans plays him so earnestly, and so like, and like I, like, when I go to the MCU, I don't go for good representation because I'm not going to get it. Like, Natasha Romanoff is my favorite actual Marvel character.
Which one
she? She's the Russian spy. She's the redhead. Scarlett Johansson.
Thank you.
She's done so terribly. Okay. She, like, all of the history that makes her a fantastic character gets erased, right?
Okay.
Because Natasha is, like, deeply embedded in, like, Cold War paranoia about Russians. And so she's a fascinating character to me, and all of that gets... like sliced away, right? And so like the only people that get any sort of depth, are the white dudes. And so I find myself being like, I'm a Steve Rogers fangirl, which like any other, like I do not like Steve in the comics. He's so bad in the comics.
But I mean, there's also like moments in these movies where, so we were talking earlier about like paranoid reading and reparative reading and needing to have both, which is a fancy way of saying you have to be able to critique something well enough to know that you are also open to other possible interpretations, so you can build out these other things. And for me, like, there are definitely, like, because it's so heavy-handed normal, there are, like, weird moments where it slips out of itself. Like, for me, when, like, what's... I'm not going to pronounce. You're going to see this real clear now. What's his face? Big, scary villain. Thanos?
Thanos, yes. Oh, the guy
This is gonna happen a lot today. This is why I'm in poetry. And I avoid proper nouns, so they're real heavy. But like, he has like the chin that makes you just wanna like never again see my face in the mirror. Or like think about acne. But when he talks about how he realizes his mistake is that he allowed people to still live because it's remembering the trauma that creates the resistance. I was like, oh man. That is so spot on to how like militarized oppression, traditional fascist styles of rhetoric work, is they want you to either forget the past trauma so that you build the future and just grieve it already. And if you can't and you maintain like an attachment to it, you get like further wiped out. And like, I mean, we don't even have to give examples. That's like just freaking obvious. So that was when I was like, oh, you're calling Trump out.
Well, then, I mean, like, you have like the MCU. And, like, within the MCU, you have Wakanda, which is, like, a utopic Afrofuturist country. And, like, one of the most interesting things about Black Panther to me is the response in that, like, it's one of the first films of its kind. And people immediately wanted, like, a plan to come out of the film. Like, how do we frame Black liberation in this, like... And it's, like, it's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They don't know. Like, you know, Ryan Coogler is amazing. The cast is amazing.
They're trying to up their ratings and stop getting criticized for having all white superheroes.
He's posing, Ryan Coogler is posing really interesting, important questions, but in sort of sketching out the trajectory of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they do not know what Black liberation looks like. They have no idea.
I mean, their version of Black liberation is that you come save the white dudes when it's like...
Or all of the Black characters go live to the African country
that is like relegated off from the rest of the universe by their choice.
And so, like, like it, to me, it's
and they're
like,
so advanced, we couldn't possibly.
Like, to me, it's not an accident that, like, the minute Sam Wilson, one of the only Black guys in the MCU, becomes Captain America, he gets shunted off the cinematic screen and onto like the Disney Plus Yeah. TV series. Yeah. Like, there's a prestige level of, like, what goes on the cinema and what goes on to, like, your streaming service.
That was my least favorite moment in the entire movie. Truthfully. Because I was, like, doing my part as the faithful girlfriend.
Yeah.
So, like, because I'm not a Marvel person per se. Yeah. Like, I really like the one with the raccoon.
Oh, those Guardians of the Galaxy.
Thanks. I have actually seen all of them. Again, proper nouns problem. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
Right? I love, I actually like the, like, last... the not Endgame, the one before Endgame, where like half the world does end up destroyed.
Infinity War.
Thank you. I actually really liked Infinity War.
Yeah, me too.
Like a decent amount. I liked Ragnarok despite myself because usually Thor is like. But actually, here's the thing: I can handle Thor better than Captain America because to me, he's really campy.
Yeah,
like he's really campy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially, like, later and later into it.
I also feel like it's not an accident that the Thor that you like is the one that's made by the indigenous New Zealander.
Oh.
Right?
Like, Taika
Waititi did Ragnarok, and so, like, it's explicitly addressing colonialism because he has a vested interest in
Because I'm like, why don't I talk about this one?
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but, like, when we watched that moment, because, like, here's my heavy-handed critique of the moment. I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Like, now that Captain America's not white, it's only because he's earned it, because he's proved he's a good nationalist dude who can take on and continue this long trajectory we've had as the good guys of the globe since World War II.
Yeah.
And it was just depressing. There was nothing creative about it, nothing. And it seemed like a way to, like, handle the race problem. That's how I saw it. I was so, like, you've got to be
As someone who's read the comics, Bucky is actually Captain America in the comics, and so
they changed it in the movie.
Well, so Sam is Captain America recently, in like a really bad run, like in a really bad run of comics, Sam Wilson becomes Captain America, and there's a whole backstory or whatever. Yeah. But like Bucky is the traditionally established, like Captain America is shot on the steps of the White House or the Capitol because it is called the Death of the Dream.
Yeah,
it's literally called the Death of the Dream.
All right, all my suspicions about the circuit breaker.
And Bucky inherits the shield and becomes Captain America. So, like, I definitely thought that they were going to make Bucky, because even though Sam is there, like, MCU's not, like, they're not going to give it to a black dude. So, for me, that moment was great because...
That makes sense. You know, Kristen was like, I disagree. And I was like, why? He's like, I'm not arguing with you.
Oh, no! Yeah! So, like... Okay. So, like the more established America successor...
So, it's one of those things where they need, like, a small deviation to make a necessary deviation.
Yeah.
I got you. Okay, I can be sold on that.
Yeah, but I can see how, like, if you've only seen the MCU and you don't have a comics background, you're
all.
Yeah, it's totally, you totally
are like, so, like, Wakanda comes from out of nowhere to save your ass, and you give the shield to the other black dude.
There are so many moments in Endgame where I'm like, I know that I'm being, like, pandered to. Like, the moment where all of the women, like, escort Peter, I'm like, I know that I'm being pandered to. Yeah. I know this is, like, a moment of, like, capitalist feminism. But I mean,
yeah, let's talk about Beyonce every day. Like, I get it. Like,
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
All right, we've deviated really far.
Oh my god,
we're talking about. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
So let's dial back.
Yeah.
How does this relate to Monstress?
Right. So.
And why do you want to talk about Monstress today?
Okay. So with Marvel Comics, it's not that the colors are uninteresting, but they're produced so fast that there's like not a lot of. Like, I can only think of one really distinct artist style that's come out of the Marvel comics in, like, the last 5 years, and it's David Aja, and his is a very, like, when you see David Aja's art, you know it's David Aja, but a lot of them, they look like how you think comics look like, you know? And Senna Takeda's art is, like, there's a lot of fabric, like, there's so much textile work, it's really elaborate, everything is sort of gold-toned.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really, it feels gilded, you know? It's really beautiful. And it's done in like all the sort of facial renderings and stuff like that look like Japanese comics.
Cool.
You know, like the eye style and the hairstyle and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's
and
what I was raised
on. Yeah, it's so beautiful and it's distinct. Like, there's no way that you see like a Sana Takeda piece of art and think that it's someone else. You know, it's Sana Takeda. You know.
Cool.
And so they're so beautiful. And so the premise behind the Monstress series is that it's set in an ultra 1900s steampunk Asia, like in a matriarchal Asia,
that's
right?
Also really
so
cool.
So one of the great things is most of the characters are women, and by virtue of most of the characters being women, most of the romantic relationships are between women. It becomes
that sounds much more.
Right? Yeah. Like there's no sort of like we need a romantic interest. Here's a dude. It's like well, the characters that you have are women, so the romantic relationships that are going to be built are between women. And it's really a story about like daughters' relationships to their mothers. So the main character, make a half wolf, it like she has a monster living in her blood that is sort of slowly coming awake, and she has this monster because her mother engineered, she basically engineered a relationship with the last person that had the monster in their blood so that she could have this child so that she would study.
Octavia Butler.
It's great. And so she's but her mother is dead and she's trying to understand like why this monster is in her blood, why everyone wants this monster in her blood, like what does her heritage mean, and like sort of layered over all of this is there is a prophecy of like there's going to be a war to end all war between all wars between all of the races and all of the species, and Mecha's monster is sort of the key to this happening.
And like, as in will catalyze it or will like
she's sort of a weapon, right? And so so that the monster becomes sort of an aspect of the war. It's really great because it's really dense, it's really hard. Like I had the first two volumes literally for like 3 years and then was like, if I wanted to write a fantasy graphic novel, like I should read the best one that's out there, and that's Monstrous. It's won like a million awards. And so it takes like the first issue, most comic single issues are like 25 to 30 pages, and the first issue of Monstrous is 70 pages.
Oh, wow.
Because she has to do so much world building sort of get you situated into the world. So it's really dense, and the first volume, like, if you're not a fantasy reader, it doesn't come. Like, even for me, and I am a pretty heavy fantasy reader, like the sort of floating parts don't come together until like the last couple of panels.
What do you mean by floating parts? Like,
so like, so you have like Mecha's personal quest to figure out who her mother is. You have like various parties who are hunting her. There's like three parties that are hunting her, and then you have like the question of why her mother was connected to one of the parties.
Oh wow! Yeah, so like you're following a lot of her.
You're following a lot of different people and a lot of different storylines that
I see
that like don't seem connected in any way until you get to the end. And like at its heart, Monstrous is a family drama. And that's my favorite kind of story. So, like, at its heart, it's about the relationships between these different people and, like, what blood means and you know, all of the other stuff. And it's just... And it's a lot of court intrigue, which I really, really love. But... And then the other thing, too, is that Mecha and all of the characters exist in a world where, like, a really horrendous, like, race war has just ended.
Okay.
Right? So,
Mecha... What was the outcome of the race war?
Stagnate. So it's like a stalemate. So nobody won. There's been this enormous loss of life. There are all of these orphans living and all of these homeless people. And Mecha's an amputee, so she doesn't have a piece of, like, the lower half of her arm. And so, like, she's been living in the city there's humans and there's Arcanics, and then there's ancients who are, like, the ancestors of the Arcanics. And so Mecha's an Arcanic. She's been living in an Arcanic camp or an Arcanic city, and she decides to go back to the human side, knowing that she could be severely, like, imprisoned and sold and all of this other stuff. And the Arcanics have this, like, cast of women who are called the Witches of Kumai or something like that.
Okay.
And they experiment on Arcanics and, like, harvest their blood. Like, there's all of these moving parts that you have to keep track of. But the story is trying to deal with, like, relationships of mothers between mothers and daughters and, like, what war trauma and what PTSD recovery looks like. And Mecha is, like, determined not to recover. Like, she's sort of embedded in her trauma and refuses any...
Yeah. Oh, this goes perfectly back to, like, the Thanos stamp.
She like resists all personal connection.
Interesting. So she resists like healing.
Yeah.
The like attachment wound basically completely because she's like, no, this isn't just in the past. This is an ongoing thing I need to remember in order to like create and imagine something better.
Yeah. So she has a friend who went through the war with her, Tuya, and Tuya's like, please stay and like and make it sort of like self-destructively is like, no, I'm gonna go figure this out.
Yeah.
And then inadvertently gets pulled into all of these. It's really great. Like, I just, like, I read, I like, inhaled it, and then could not talk about anything else for, like, 3 solid weeks.
We're going to do our wrap-up now. Our camera died. It is recording again.
Yes.
Where do we leave off?
Okay, so where I wanted to leave off was this is why you should consume media, not by white men, because then you get, because the great thing about Monstrous, as someone who has seen every single Marvel movie, unfortunately.
Or fortunately,
yeah. It was great. with Monstrous, you know, like, both the author and the artist are Asian, so it doesn't feel male-gazy, and it feels really rooted in itself, and really, like, aware of the conversations it's engaging in a really productive way. And I think part of that is that Marjorie and Sana are both such, like, thoughtful artists, that, like, every step of the process and every piece of the story has meaning. But I think part of it also, too, is that they're both women of color, and so they get the stakes of a post-war world that is dealing with this sort of PTSD, right? And this sort of trauma and how that shapes characters and their relationships with each other. And like, it is in a lot of ways very much about generational trauma. And I saw one of my friends who's Korean, she was like, this is the most Asian mom book that I've like ever read. And like, obviously I'm not Asian, so I can't comment on that. But there is, you know, there is like, you don't get that when if it was being written by white people. Like that's not an aspect of the book that you would get. And I think that that's, that those sorts of projects that are written by people who understand those stakes and are sort of and are really vested in those stakes on a really personal level then generate like abilities or like more productive possibilities of reading and understanding in those sorts of texts because it is a fantasy, like it's not like, you know, it's there's like were people in it or whatever, you know, but it also is like some of the animal, some of the furries are my favorite characters.
And this ties in really well actually with some of the other guests on the show. Because poets are talking about this a lot right now. Like, can you write a perspective that's not yours? Or should you, or why or why not? And usually the advice is like, first of all, ask yourself why you feel compelled to. Like, what is the driving motivation? And then like from there you end up getting different advice from different poets. Usually it's just like no. Like obviously no. Right? But you had a different take on it than
I think poetry's really different, right? Because poetry because for me if a white person was like, I'm going to write a poetry about being Asian, I'd be like, I feel like poetry is in some ways more viscerally personal than fiction. Like, there's a level of distance in fiction where I'd be like, I don't know why you want to do that. But for me, really what it comes down to for me in terms of writing fiction is that oftentimes a lot of writers are just not that self-reflective and self-reflexive. So it's not even, like, and not willing to give the hard answer to the question. So like, why do you want to write this story? Oftentimes the answer is because I feel like it, and that's not a good enough reason. But people don't want to admit that, you know, and people don't want to like there's so many there are enough fantasy books where I'm like, you just went on Wikipedia, like you don't understand that this is someone's culture and someone's and the way that people live their lives and the ways and that this is like a living moving fabric with nuances that you don't are not going to get if you don't talk to someone from that culture. You're also not going to get if you hire someone to read at the copy editing stage of the process, right?
So from the very beginning, it's an integral part throughout.
Like, I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I'm going to shout out a white dude who I heard I heard give a book talk once, David Arnold, who's a YA writer. And I remember him talking, I think it was his second book, Kids of Appetite, which features Somali immigrants and a disabled character with a really specific disability, and she has like facial paralysis. And before he started writing, he got in touch with the foundation that handles that disability, and he got in touch with the refugee community in his city, and he spent, like, months just talking to them, like, getting their stories out, understanding what their experiences were, before he ever sat down to write the book. And it's not a book that I've ever heard anyone be like, this representation is awful, because sort of the care of what do those experiences look like, how do we engage with them, like, how do they become represented, is part of the foundation of the book, versus, like, if you were like, this is my take on this thing,
then
you
check it for me, so now check it for me,
it's not a spelling bee, like, if you misspelled guard, which I did at a spelling bee. Like,
I still do.
Many times.
But it's just like, you know, like, it's a much, like, it's like once the racism or the homophobia or whatever becomes embedded in the plot, like, at the copy editing stage, your book is
it's
set.
Too lost,
you can't, well, like, also from, like, literally from, like, a structural point of view, like, at the copy editing stage, you cannot change the book, because then it has to be reset, and that costs money. Right? So, like, a culturally sensitive read is not like it's not going to function at the line stage. Like, you cannot do anything.
But that, like, so okay, we'll wrap up really quickly. But that so corresponds to the way people think about, like, oppression and marginality in the first place, which is that it's about the presentation of things at the end instead of like an ongoing sustained interiority.
Well, I had this moment where I realized that, like, white people think that, like, when people of color have meltdowns about racism, that it's like this one event, and they're like, we don't understand why you're so upset about thing. And it's like,
where did this come from?
Where it's like, oh no, this is 30 years of stuff, and you're just the straw that broke the camel's back, right? I have like a lifetime of stuff leading up to this moment where I was like, you know what? I'm gonna lose it.
Like, the final stranger snaps. But it's because of, like, that interior process. It's not just about, like, this thing can be polished off at the end. And it's based on, like, how we can then present it.
right? Or, like, it's not something that, like, isn't written from the core at the beginning.
Right, yeah.
I love that. All right, cool. On the, like, note of non-closure, much anger. Yeah. like, come on already. We'll wrap up there. Yeah. So, real quick, where can people find you online?
So, I'm on Twitter as Tamaya Dawood. I'm on the websites as TamayaBooks.com. I'm on Facebook as Tamaya Dawood as well. And I'm on Instagram as Tamaya with three I's.
Here on the poetry blog for the call for comments today, I want you to comment with your favorite comic or YA sci-fi book and why, and how you see different layers of possibilities in them potentially if you're feeling real ambitious. And then of course the poetryblog.com is where you can find the Instagram, the Twitter, all of the videos of the podcast. If you're listening to the podcast version of this, the YouTube version, hi YouTube people, has a lot of visual aids, and it will also have all of the things we just said spelled out, so you can go find those there. And there's always descriptions below in the description.
Corresponding to the image.
Thank you. All right. On that note, thanks everybody for watching. Remember to like and subscribe, because I'm on YouTube and not